Hello, lovely Pushback Talks listeners. You're probably wondering, who is this? It's not Leilani, and it's definitely not Frederick. So let me start by introducing myself. My name is Kirsten. I'm on Leilani's team at The Shift, where I work as her communications and marketing manager, and I moonlight as one of the producers here on Pushback Talks. If you've been listening for a while, you know that each year we like to use the summers as an opportunity to revisit our favorite episodes from the season and focus in on our favorite parts of each interview. But this year, we're doing things a little differently. Every week, we'll take a look back at one of our favorite episodes from across all 6 seasons of Pushback Talks and give you an update on how things have progressed and changed since the episode was first released. In our very first season, Frederick and Leilani held a magnifying glass up to the growing industry of private student accommodation. In the years since that episode was first released, we've seen protests in countries around the world as students push back against impossible living conditions. Turkey, Italy, the U.S., Canada, and the Netherlands are just a few of the countries where students have taken to sleeping outside, either in protests or out of a lack of housing availability. And it seems the problem will only continue to grow. Private equity is moving increasingly into the student and senior care industries, and we know that means prices will only continue to climb. As the summer draws to a close and students around the world return to campus for the new academic year, the challenges surrounding private student accommodation remain, necessitating urgent attention and action to ensure accessible and affordable housing for students that are working tirelessly to better themselves and create a better world. Join us as we close out this year's summer series by revisiting The Vulture Ate My Student Housing.
I'm Frederick Gerten, and I'm the filmmaker.
And I'm Leilani Farha. I'm the advocate.
Good morning. I guess it's morning over in Ottawa, Canada, because it's not morning here. So then
it's a big blue sky morning in Ottawa. Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay. And I heard it's also garbage day.
It is. Yeah. Garbage day. It's a hellish day. I walk my dog, Bean, and all he wants to do is sniff and smell around everything, pee and shit, basically.
So that's how you started your morning.
That's how I started my morning. Garbage day.
But Bean is a nice guy because he's in the credits of Push the Film because he actually has a small role in the film.
A small but starring role, I'd say.
Not many dogs have credits in films, so it's like a star dog.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
This week we're going to talk about, you know, this like scary thing that it feels like it's almost like a war against young people. It's the young people are under so much pressure for a place to live. You know, Absolutely. It's almost impossible to leave home and to move out because it's so expensive. You know, students' homes, you know, it's a thriving business, but it's also like a war. But anyway, let's start with a little quiz because we've been talking a lot about Oatly. And Blackstone. And actually, Blackstone, this big private equity firm, is much more interesting than Oatly. But their investment in Oatly became kind of a symbol for something that is going on our planet. But can you see the link between Oatly and students?
I do know the link between Oatly and students. Oatly is about sustainability, and students have started movements around the world for a sustainable environment.
And there are a lot of people are vegan also, so they love the lovely love the Oatly product. But it's also, then we have Blackstone. And what is Blackstone then doing outside of going into buying into Oatly? Do you know?
Well, I actually do know what Blackstone has been up to quite recently. They're buying student housing in a big way, in the UK in particular, isn't it?
Yeah, so they were buying into this IQ student housing portfolio and actually bought it from Goldman Sachs, some other nice guys, for £4.7 billion, like a small little shopping round. So it's good. You young people out there, you are great business. And I saw in a Toronto newspaper that, you know, you should really, it's good to have property close to universities. Why? Because you can always rent them out to students. But then you will say students have no money. They don't. But if their parents sign on to the papers, then the rent is secured. It's always a good business. So be That's proud, right. young people. You are good business. Mm. So what do we, I mean, you've been looking into a little bit about the student homes this week. You've been Googling around and checking out all your connections. What do you see? What do you see?
Well, I mean, it does, I have to say, it makes me sad and it enrages me because, you know, we think, of course, we all think of young people as, you know, there's so much potential. They're looking forward. They've decided to go to university. That's a big deal. They're thinking about their future. And then to think that they go and they just get so heavily indebted because, of course, tuition is expensive. But what I've learned actually through my Googling is that what really sets them back is the cost of housing while they're going to university. So I feel like just as they're trying to start out, they're being hit down, you know, hit down with these heavy costs and debt. And of course, it touches me personally. I have a teenage daughter. She's in her final year of high school, Cleo. And she wants to go off. We live in Ottawa. She wants to go off to Toronto, biggest city in Canada, one of the most expensive real estate markets in the world.
Oh my God.
And how are we going to afford to house her while she's at university or whatever she decides to do in Toronto?
So what are you thinking?
Tough. I'm crying. I better get a different job that pays a lot better. What she wants to do, actually, she wants to go to acting school. And so that's a private university. So that's really expensive to begin with. And they don't have a residence, like a student housing residence. So we'll have to find her private market accommodation. And honestly, Frederick, I was looking to see if it's cheaper to buy than it is to rent. It isn't.
That's crazy.
It isn't.
It's not. One of the things that made me go into researching what became Push was actually when my own daughter moved to London, mm-hmm. also to study theater. And she was staying with, she found on the internet, you know, two mm-hmm. Swedish girls who had an apartment and she moved in with them.
Okay.
And they all wanted to save some money. It was really far out. It was like not close to any railway station. So that because of that, it was a little bit cheaper. And one of the girls was working nights, so she was sleeping in the kitchen so they could save some extra money.
Wow.
Then one day, my daughter calls me crying. Mm. And the landlord is in the apartment, has opened with it a different key, and tells her to get out, pack your things, get out. So she had to do that, you know, while he was, and he kicked her out into the street.
Crazy.
She couldn't even bring her stuff. And of course, me as a dad, you know, what I do, you know. So I posted on Facebook, friends, anyone in London, yeah. my daughter is on the street.
Oh my God.
Anybody can help out. So, but I actually got a lot of reactions.
Right.
Not also people helping out, so she actually got a place to sleep, but also a lot of other stories about how young people are treated in big cities. I mean, in cities all over the place. But I also got in contact with legal people who could help out because it's like this is sure. like a big thing, and of course. The landlord here in London, he wanted, of course, to kick out all three girls to get the deposition, you know, to rob them from the deposition. Because
right.
normally they will ask for like 6 months, which is still a lot of money.
The deposit, you mean? Like what they yeah. put down when they first moved in? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's so terrible. But there's so many terrible stories out there. I mean, everywhere I travel and have traveled when I was rapporteur, I always like to talk to young people. and the stories are terrible. I remember being in Ireland, and I was exhausted. I got to my hotel, found out that my hotel was actually on top of a discotheque, and I was trying to figure out how the hell I was going to stay there. And so I sort of flopped down in a chair. There was like a bar there, so I just flopped down in this chair, and this really nice server came up to me, and she said, "You look beat. You know, do you want something to drink?" And I said, "Oh, I'd love a glass of Sauvignon Blanc." So she brings me this glass and we struck up a conversation. Well, so this is in Dublin, and she told me she had come from somewhere in Latin America. I can't remember which country. I think it might have been Brazil. And she had come actually to learn English and then to study business. That's what she wanted to do. And she was living in a house with 11 other students.
A very big house?
No, I think it was three bedrooms.
Oh my God.
And yeah, three bedrooms. I think there was one bathroom, 11 people, and they were all paying a huge amount. So, I mean, the landlord was making a killing. Mm. And she said she couldn't find anything else, you know, that was available. I then
And then she had to work extra to be able to pay that extortion rent.
Exactly.
Also.
And she's paying tuition for this university program that she was enrolled in. I mean, she was really feeling completely squeezed. Mm. I looked up some info about Ireland, trying to figure out, well, like, what the heck? Why are 11? Why is this? And I mean, if you know anything about Ireland, you know that they have one of the most financialized housing systems in the world, especially since the global financial crisis.
Is there a special private equity fund involved on Ireland?
Well, you know what's so interesting? Yes, Blackstone is involved, but there are many others.
Well, Blackstone is the biggest one, the biggest landlord on Ireland, I guess.
That's right.
Since the financial crisis, yeah.
Yeah. But also, as I understand it, about a third of every building that's built or unit that's built, only one third, sorry, of all units that are built actually go to market. The others are investor owned, not on the market. So in 1 year, 21,000 units built, 8,000 approximately would be on market. The rest, not available. So then you have 11 people living, young people living in a house together.
There are empty homes, and then you have other homes totally jam-packed with people.
Exactly. But, you know, even when I went to Nigeria, I was actually shocked by this because I didn't expect it for some reason. That's my own bias, maybe. But I was in Lagos and I met with some young people and they were telling me that they had moved from smaller cities in Nigeria to Lagos to go to university. And it was the same thing. They were living packed like sardines in places, and there are many vacant homes in Lagos. So crazy. And paying a lot of rent in Lagos, you know, so poor young people.
But it's a totally a global story, because we hear the same stories from everywhere. You remember we were in Korea when you were on mission, we were filming for Push. We went out to a student who was living like almost 2 hours away from town. And she had before lived very close to the university, but then she got evicted and now she was living far out. And the home was so tiny, so she could be in her bed and put her hand into the washing machine. Yeah, it was like it was totally crazy.
It was
so small we couldn't enter. We tried to. Yeah. It's not in the film, but we filmed there, but we couldn't enter everyone. You know, the teams. Mm-hmm. We have to wait outside. It was like, so this is happening everywhere, and it's. And Stockholm, the Swedish Tenant Union, mm-hmm. they are called Hyresgästföreningen, just so you know. Can you say that?
Hyresgästföreningen.
Hyresgästföreningen.
Okay, I'm not going to try.
Okay, so the Swedish Tenant Union. All of you can go back and do it at home.
That's right.
But they are publishing a story today or these days about, you know, 67,000 young people in Stockholm who are looking for a place to live, and they still have to stay with their parents. So they can't go anywhere. It's too expensive everywhere. And so they have now like a social media campaign where people can compare, you know, stories. So the stories is like, I moved 7 times in 9 months. 9 months. You know, it's like people have been moving so many times and sleeping on people's couches, and they move. So they get kicked out constantly because they're in like second, third, fourth hand of renting from people.
Crazy.
And it's also people are. This is something I've seen for many places. Mm-hmm. You know. When especially women ask, you know, look for a place to live, they say, well, you can actually come and stay with us. Are you into a threesome? God. Or could you maybe walk naked 50% of the time? You will get rent for free. I've seen that from Toronto, that story.
Yes.
There's an amazing journalist in Scotland who's been doing also a lot of stories about this.
Sexual exploitation for rent. I mean, sex for rent.
Sex for rent.
Terrible.
It sounds like a funny story because it's so bizarre, but can you imagine, even you're so desperately looking for a place to live, and then people will put that up?
It's horrible. It's so horrible. I mean, the stories actually abound. Now you got me thinking about all the stories. Like California, everyone knows, has a homelessness problem, big one. And I've been to California a few times, and both times heard about, I actually didn't meet any students, but heard that students are applying for university, they're getting in, but then they have enough money for the tuition, but not for rent, because of course in California rent is crazy. So they're wanting to sleep in their cars while going to university. I mean, imagine. And then it's illegal to sleep in your car on a public road, so you get ticketed. So there's someone was trying to pass legislation to give students the right to sleep in their cars.
That's nice.
To go to university. Where have we come, Frederick? Oh my God. The right to sleep in your car.
I mean, you're a lawyer. Isn't that a good legislation to have you should be able to sleep in your car? Yeah. I actually saw in Hollywood Reporter a story about young actors, you know, going to LA for auditions, for work, and they're also sleeping in their cars. Before, people could actually get a place to live. But the rents has been shooting up over the last 5 years in an extreme way.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's probably why if you look around the world, the rates of young people still living with their parents is like crazy compared to in the 90s, for example. I think in Ireland is one of the countries that's the worst in Europe, just like astronomically increasing the number of, you know, people between the ages of, I don't know, 20 and 35 or something like that, living still with their parents. The UK is the same. I mean, it's...
So Leilani, you're a global expert on this. So, but the normal political song about this would be, well, we should build more. We should, you know, it's like, you know, it's a classical thing of we need to build more student homes and so on. Is that a solution?
Maybe, but not in the current conditions, let's put it that way, because more student homes are being built, but they're being built and purchased by the global financial actors. As you mentioned, Blackstone moved in, bought IQ for billions of dollars. And there are other big actors. There's one in the States called Gray Star. It's funny how they have these names, Blackstone, Gray Star, anyway.
Black Rock.
Like, what is that? What is that?
That's the creative minds.
Oh, it's so impoverished, isn't it? Anyway, so, you know, they are building and purchasing. They call it purpose-built student accommodation. So these big investors are themselves building, as I understand it, student housing, but it is expensive. It's actually quite luxury. I looked at the rates, the monthly rates in one city in the States, I can't remember where, but it was like $2,500 or $2,200 a month. That's just for the accommodation. And think about the tuition. Tuition in the US is very expensive. So, and that's US dollars.
In Sweden, it's different because universities are for free. Mm. So for the family, it's not that big of a stress if your kid wants to go to university. And there are student loans. It's hard to survive. But I can see now that the student loans are not fitting into the cost, the real cost of living for people. So it's right. it's extremely expensive. Also, student homes are very, very expensive. Right. Also here.
But how does it work in Sweden? Does the when does the student have to start paying back the loan, or how does it work?
When you start to work, you have to start to pay back.
Right. And your wages get garnished, like it gets taken off your wages, or you pay actively?
No, you have to pay. And if you don't, they will come after you. And they are like, they are fierce.
And is it increasing, like the student debt load on Swedish students? Has that increased?
Yeah, it's very tough. It's extremely expensive. But still, we don't have to pay the tuition, you know. Right. So you can imagine, so here, at least a working class person or an immigrant kid can still get into university. But then the next step, you know, to be able to live on a decent place. Yeah. And of course, if you don't have all the money, you also have to work at the same time. Exactly. And this is what you see, that students are fighting so hard to get through their studies, but also to work on this part to be able to make it. It's not fair, because then the rich kids can just fly by. And, you know, remember we were in Sheffield in England, where we had a UK premiere of Push at the amazing Sheffield Dockfest. Mm-hmm. I've been coming there for several years, but suddenly people told me that it was something totally new thing that's called luxury student studios.
Oh, right.
So, and then these universities, they, to be able to survive, just try to get in foreign students that pay more tuition.
Yeah.
And then these wealthy kids were kicking out other kids, you know. So suddenly it was impossible to get a student home close to the university. So if you don't have the money, you'll have to be on the bus, you know.
When you think about the repercussions of that, I read a story, I think it was in the New York Times, about that exact scenario where universities are creating these luxury accommodations, and like luxury like crazy. Like I read about one where they had, do you know what a lazy river is?
No.
It's like a swimming pool. So a lazy river is like a swimming pool where you can just sit and it pushes you along like you're in a river. Okay. It's like deluxe kind of swimming pool, right? So they're putting these in student residences. They have like all these like fancy cafes in them and all of this sort of stuff. That then is expensive student housing. And it means they featured one young woman. She ended up doing exactly as you said. She had to move to the suburbs, far away from the university. And the transportation was crappy. It was making her spend way more time just getting to school and getting back home. I think she did have a job, but it was far away. I mean, all of what you're saying was her reality. And then the story ended up concluding that it's creating a divide between wealthy and poor or less affluent students, but also affecting their grades.
There was actually a story in the Bloomberg saying exactly this, and there is a
Bloomberg,
a guy from New York University, Thomas Lately, says that this rise of luxury student housing can have a perverse and unintended consequence. So you force the less wealthy students farther away, and this is like would hurt their grades. That's what you said. So it's also dividing, you know. Before, the universities were like a melting pot of people, but suddenly the wealthy kids are close to university, and the rest are really far away. Our world is not getting fairer and juster.
Exactly.
And I think this is something we all need to talk more about. And all you young people out there, I really understand if you're angry and pissed off, and I think one thing we should all think about is to start to monitor who is owning the student homes in your town around your university, and to try to map all this and then communicate the mapping you've made. So it's because this has been changing in a short time, and sometimes we don't discover the changes because it's from day to day, a concentration of ownership. So before there was much more of these mom and pops, you know, smaller accommodations and so on. Not always amazing, you know, not always nice people, but it, you know, but it was like smaller businesses. Now it's this kind of global actors coming in. And then you say there's a lot of this is like real estate investment trusts are also So tell me about them. Yes. What are they doing and who are they?
Yeah. So I've only done like limited research on this, but I did try to figure out who is owning all this student housing? Like who are these gray stars? And the way they seem to do every student housing deal is through these things called real estate investment trusts, which you and I have talked about before. And we're going to constantly be learning about these things because it is a complicated financial instrument. But basically, it is a financial instrument. It's a way to group a whole lot of housing units into one financial instrument. And then you make the whole portfolio of units available to shareholders. And a couple of things about that. One thing I just learned yesterday was that to invest in a real estate investment trust, there's rules about who can invest. You basically have to be uber wealthy, making over, you know, several hundreds of thousands of dollars as an individual, like more than $200,000 or $300,000. Or you have to be a pension fund or another big institutional fund. So real estate investment trusts are only available to the already wealthy. That's one. And two, there are really big tax advantages to real estate investment trusts. So basically, if you set one up, you're not paying tax. That's the shorthand of it.
Yeah, but if you have a lot of money, why should you pay tax?
Yeah, exactly. No one else does with a lot of money.
No, the tax is for us, you know. It's not for people with a lot of money, because how would that work? Then they will have to give away some of their wealth, you know. They would be unhappy. And do we really want to live in a world with unhappy rich people? Come on. We want them to be happy.
Well, and think about the circle of it. Frederick, it's so amazing because if you think, I mean, one of the things universities and the investors are saying, universities say, especially the public universities, they are saying, we don't have enough money to build decent student housing. Mm. Well, why don't they have enough money? Because there's not enough tax base to fund universities properly. And why is there not enough tax base? I mean, it's completely circular.
So you mean the rich people are kind of, they are a part of that game?
Looks like it.
Shit.
Surprise.
It's a complicated one. Because, you know, we're kind of brought up in, you know, in the sense of that everything is getting better and it's more equal and everybody has almost the same opportunities. That's at least the story we have here in Sweden, that everybody has the same opportunity. But I can also see that it's also here, it goes in a very different direction. And also here in Sweden, people, all the rich people, they find ways to not pay taxes,
right?
And of course then they work a lot to lobby the politics to keep it that way. The lobby investments, they that's what they do with their money. They spend them on lobbies so they can be safe with their with all their money. What are they doing all the money? Is it just a game?
I don't know. What are they doing with all their money? I think there is a bit of a game element, isn't there? So crazy, sitting on all that money.
It's some kind.
You've taken us to a very dark place,
okay,
Frederick.
So I'm sorry about that. But, you know, talking about money, Pushback Talks is produced without any money, which, of course, it's a very bad business, extremely bad business. And to be able to change that, we have a Patreon account, which means you can go to patreon.com and look for Pushback Talks. So there's also a link on, you know, on the BuzzFeed, where the pod hotel, and we are already up to 5 Patreons who together pay us $26 a month. So we're actually doing fine, and but we asked some of the Patreons, one friend, I don't know him, but he's a friend, Christopher Bell from Calgary in your country, Canada. Hmm. And he enjoys our conversation. He really liked that we brought in hope that we had in one of our calls.
I liked bringing in hope too.
Our ambition is to bring in more guests in the podcast and more voices. It's like it's a little bit of a production thing that we are so tight in producing this. We don't really have time, but we are interested to get more voices. So just write to us, and you can do that on pushback@wgfilm.se, pushback@wgfilm.se. And, you know, write stories to us and tell us where to go. It helps. And we also have Catherine Webster from Denver, Colorado. And she's also, and of course, she's extremely preoccupied with what's going on in the United States. She's herself in the event industry. So you can imagine industry is like, I have a lot of friends also in the event industry here, also musicians. They're totally out of work, and it's like it's so tough. So you can imagine if you're sitting on with a high rent, and then you don't suddenly have any income. So it's a lot of people are
scary,
are under stress
very
right
scary.
Now. But thank you, Catherine, for being a friend, and let's hope we can deliver stuff that will make you. There's a lot of depressing news, but I think we need to. There is hope in understanding. It's hope in
absolutely.
There's hope in being, you know, creating a language to talk about what's going on. I mean, and that's our ambition.
Well, and I have to say, I feel this young people in student housing in particular is, it's like, I've been trying to trigger, like, it's, and send out, you know, the warning flares, because there isn't actually that much activism or pushback against what's happening to student accommodation, and it needs to start. I actually, and this is a shout out to Our Hope, who appeared on Pushback Talks, I'm hoping Our Hope will start a shift youth chapter.
Wow.
And start getting, she doesn't know this yet. My team just talked about it this morning, so this might be news to her. Depends on when this airs, but we're excited to get her. She's an advocate, and she wants to be a housing advocate.
So young people out there who want to push back, so please write to us, and we will connect you with Hope and the shift. Because I think pushback is important. You know, remember in South Africa a few years ago there was a huge student movement called The Fees Must Fall, you know. It's a very, very strong movement that got like totally beaten up by the police, but you know, because it was also about the right to education.
Yeah, we had that here in Canada too. The Quebecois, the youth students in Quebec, took to the streets on the same issue a few years back, and they're so strong. I mean, we need to harness their energy,
And in Chile, the student movement has been ongoing for more than 10 years for the right to education. And of course, also in Chile, they have the same challenges around housing. Also, a lot of wealthy people parking their money into houses that then stand empty, and, you know, and the rents are going up. And it's hard for people to you know, be close to the universities. And I mean, you know, in Push, we listen to Professor Stieglitz. He's talked about that people, you know, entities like Blackstone, they're not really producing anything new. They're actually just, you know, taking out wealth. And what students are doing, they are actually studying to do something that can make the world better, you know, to take... Mm-hmm. We need universities. We need young people to enter there to come out with knowledge and strength. But for these financial actors, they're only interested into, you know, sucking out values. Kind of provocative. Yeah. I don't mind. It makes me unhappy.
I think
it makes me angry. Sorry.
Yeah, it makes me angry. Makes me angry. But I think there's a nice pushback moment for students to start actually talking to pension funds that are investing in the student housing, because by investing in the student housing, the pension funds are actually potentially exacerbating inequality, and that has a negative impact on the need for pension funds, how healthy pension funds have to be. Again, it's a circular thing. So I think I'm going to put my faith in young people to rise up on this one, because it's not sustainable. I mean,
but I mean, there could be kind of an alliance also with young people and older people, because, you know, the small money I have in pension funds, I want that money to be used in a way so it makes this planet better. It makes it a better place for humanity. And I don't want my pension money to be played around with Blackstone or other, you know. So I would like them to have a more of a long-term doing good investment. I don't care if you know, the growth isn't that strong. I prefer to make less, you know.
That's
if I can live in a better society where people are happier.
It will be a zero-sum game, because your pension fund is going to, it might be nice and high when you get your pension, but it might end up paying off your kids' debt incurred because pension funds have invested in housing in a way that's made it more expensive. So
yeah, I mean, that's the Blackstone and buying into Oatly, and Oatly, who built this brand in, you know, together with baristas around the world, you know, suddenly this passionate coffee people, their rents are going up because of the same model, you know. So it's like, so if you work with people like Blackstone, they will only make your life more expensive. The big question is, do we at all need private equity funds? You know, is there another way of doing this? Because 50% of all money on the world stock markets are pension money. So it's a lot of energy and power in that. And that power should belong to the people who put the money into the pension funds. But now we are kind of out of control. I think it's a little bit about getting the control back. Anyway, now it's time to leave. But tomorrow is another day, and it will not be a garbage day, so you can walk Bean without too much sniffing around.
Mm. Tomorrow is an interesting day in my life. It's a Saturday, but I am doing a bit of work because I'm joining some folks in a Zoom in Oslo, Norway, because there is a member of parliament who's trying to change the constitution to include
the right to housing.
Wow. So I'm going to be in discussion with them about
and
that.
Push,
so that is
push
super cool.
Push was just on TV on Norway. It was just the shorter TV version. If you are in Norway and want to see the full film, you should go to pushthefilm.com, and then you can see the full film. It's actually 90 minutes and more. So you can imagine you will have much more time with Leilani if you watch the full film. And why shouldn't you? I mean, that's the best way to spend your time, isn't it?
Oh, so nice. You're so nice.
Anyway, write to us and tell your friends about our podcast. Subscribe, rate it, post about our podcast, because as we said, we have no money, so we need help. We don't have any marketing money. So we need your help. But it's a cool thing to be dependent on real people. I think so. You're the best sponsors.
Yeah.
So and if you find the Patreon account, join us. It's sexy to be a patron for Pushback Talks.
I agree.
Bye-bye, Leilani. Take care.
Ciao, Frederick.
Pushback Talks is produced by WG Film. To support the podcast, become a patron by going to patreon.com/pushbacktalks. Follow us on social media at @make_theshift and @push_the_film. Or check out our websites, maketheshift.org, pushthefilm.com, or breakingsocialfilm.com.